I'm talking here with Father John Guiney, and you've talked before about the issue of priestly celibacy, but the issue has come up again because there are some Italian women who want to meet with Pope Francis and they want to make a petition to have their priests or the men that they're having relationships with be allowed to marry them.
There are many priests and women who have fallen in love with one another. And I think when that happens, people have to make choices. And I can really understand the suffering of the women and of these women who shared with Pope Francis recently their dilemma and their suffering. And I do think that the men have to make choices themselves. They made a promise. Now they have to say, in these circumstances, from the point of view of justice, do I fulfill this loving relationship? Unfortunately, the choice they have to make now is to leave. And I think that's a choice that has to be considered, especially out of respect and care for the other person. But from the point of view of church policy and church structure, I would be looking at the issue of mandatory celibacy as in fact depriving the rights of the people of God and depriving them of in fact the quintessential sacrament of the Eucharist. I also look at, I'm back in Ireland now just for the last number of years, and I see the age profile of the priests in parishes. And there is different responses by the local bishops and the local diocese, like clustering of parishes, closing down some churches. And many priests feel they're almost like, you know, administrators of the sacraments. They're like people who are constantly on the run, just giving out sacraments, whilst having very little time to spiritually accompany people. And I would ask, you know, especially in the West, there are so many priests who have left the priesthood and making that choice and said, I want to marry the woman I've fallen in love with, who would love to continue as a priest in their local parish. And I would say, why not open the doors to ex-priests who have married and who have responded to the call of these women, allow these our friends that we've fallen in love with, our priests that we've fallen in love with, to marry us, but also to continue to exercise their priesthood. And I would say this: we lack a kind of a vision, thinking outside the box. Not in the West, especially around the shortage of priests, especially when we have this whole pool of ex-priests, almost in every, probably in every parish in Ireland, who would love to continue in the ministerial priesthood and to provide the Eucharist in situations, again, where the people of God are at times deprived of the Eucharist or may have a Eucharist once a month, do suffer from what I would call spiritual care, like a visit of the priest to a sick person in hospital or at home, to have time to sit down with someone to talk about their spiritual journey and their problems. Why not release this wonderful energy, I call it spiritual energy, but also skills and formation of the thousands of men who have left the priesthood to fulfill a loving relationship in marriage with a woman. Why not allow these men to exercise their priesthood in this world as well, this part of the world where there is a real absence of priests?
And of course that the priests who are in the dilemma of trying to consider whether they should have to leave or not should be allowed to stay. Do you think Pope Francis will listen to these women? I mean, it seems to be a particularly personal appeal.
I think Pope Francis, coming from what I would call a developing country and a developing world, is very much aware of the different context and cultures of the churches in the developing world. One practical element of that context is the level of isolation of Christian communities. The missionary age has passed, and now the local churches and local priests are trying to follow the steps of the missionaries. In many places, and especially in areas of conflict, I take South Sudan, for example, it is really difficult to cater for the needs of thousands of people who live in very isolated places. But in these isolated places are really fervent Christians, fervent Catholics, men and women, who can take on the role of nourishing the people of God in that particular community. A woman refugee said to me in West Tanzania, he said, "Our greatest hunger, although we have passed through many trials, has been the hunger for the Eucharist." And I think that hunger for the Eucharist can be answered by ordaining, firstly, I think, married men who are already in those communities building the church. And I think Francis, coming from the southern hemisphere, has a greater sense and feel for that hunger, for that poverty, I think, of spirit, of the people of God, which we in the north perhaps may not have the same appreciation for, given our infrastructure, given our communications skills. I think Francis has probably a greater sense of the needs of poor people in those circumstances that we in the north do not have that probably sense or appreciation of, because we haven't experienced that type of poverty ourselves.
You talk about it being a practical solution, and particularly in those more extreme circumstances or in circumstances where people are experiencing poverty. But on the other hand, will there not be an additional cost in a sense to the church or to the community? Because not only do they have to support a priest, but maybe they have to support the priest and the wife and the family. You know, what were the sort of practical reasons, I suppose, when you think about it, for bringing in priestly celibacy, and how would they be addressed?
I think often in developing countries, priesthood, as it is seen now, is often seen as entering into a new class, getting new status. The big problem with priesthood, as we understand it, in often poor countries, is that there's often a division of class. And of course, they become sometimes like a clerical class that needs special attention. While when a priest comes from within the community, is ordained within the community, he is willing and able to live on the same level, to live a simple life like the rest of the community, with a family. And so if we are to envision priesthood as service, as being with the people rather than lording it over the people or entering a different status, then we're talking about more expense, which we see in many circumstances. And so I think when the community have, like in the early Christian community, have nominated a person and say, "This person is worthy and adequate to be our priest," then he is also seen as a person who can live with us and live within our lifestyle, a person whom we can support with the means that we have and who will be happy with the support that we have. So that priesthood is a service, it is not a status, nor is it a privilege.